You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. Brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the world's finest bookmaker, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary. To celebrate the launch of Nick Luck Daily, Fitzdares have a special sign-up offer that will double your winnings on your first bet up to a £50 stake. Just go to www.fitzdares.com/luck to sign up. Hi there, welcome to the show. It's Thursday, August the 13th, and depending on where you are in the country, you're either roasting or soaked to the bone, or both, as heavy thunderstorms punctuate and dramatise this extraordinary heatwave. Now this morning, David Redvers, I couldn't help noticing, racing manager to Qatar Racing, excuse the background sound, posted a picture of the storm damage in his Herefordshire garden, lamenting the passing of a large pink stuffed child's toy. But as everybody knows, David, you can't kill a unicorn. More pressing matters for Redvers and his boss Sheikh Farhad, with Cameco likely to head to next week's sensational Judmont International at York. His swashbuckling connection sending him straight into the path of Gayath, whose trainer Charlie Appleby joins me in a few moments' time. That'll be another behind-closed-doors high-profile meeting. At the end of this show, Caroline Davis from the Racecourse Association is joining me with a message to all participants that they must continue to adhere to the strictest protocols. But it wouldn't be another day on this podcast without mentioning another controversial incident involving interference and a jockey getting banned or not banned. And this time, it's Shamey Heffernan, back from his 22-day suspension at Goran Park yesterday, and he picked up another 4 days for careless riding. In an interview with Racing TV's Kevin O'Ryan, in which he referenced the recent debate, he said, "Some of these people passing remarks have never ridden in races." Now, I'm joined this morning by broadcaster and a regular to this podcast, Jane Mangan, who very much has ridden in races. Now, Jane, do you need to have done it to have an opinion on it?
I don't believe so. I think those who have never ridden in a race often have a more objective view than those who have previously ridden on the track. And to be fair, it is all a matter of perspective. I think Seamus makes a valid point. He obviously feels very hard done by, but this is a bigger issue. I feel after attending the Curragh and the Phoenix Stakes, and not alluding solely to those two unique cases of Aloha Star and the Learjet, and Seamus yesterday at Goran, I think what we have in Ireland is a lack of consistency. And it is coming to the fore on the back of a lot of media traction regarding stewarding and interference. And you can read of that as you want, but all any racing jurisdiction can hope to achieve is consistency. And without being like calling a spade, we know in France, things are a lot tighter than in Britain and Ireland. But in the last couple of days in Ireland, have things changed? And if that has been the case, please do step forward and tell us that the rules are changing, because riders are going to have to ride to those rules.
So what you're saying is that you think what was informing Shamey Heffernan's comments was that he feels that stewarding decisions are being influenced by a wider media campaign?
Probably, yes. And he's obviously entitled to his own opinion, and I would totally listen to Seamus, because he has ridden for decades and is often, like when he got the ban in France, he took it on the chin and didn't say any more about it. Whereas this, if he feels that he is hard done by, we have to listen to him. And I saw the manoeuvre. I don't think it merited a 4-day ban. I thought it was fair. To be honest, when I was at the Curragh, I was very, very surprised by the demotion of Aloha Star. And I don't think we should really get into that, because obviously that is pending appeal. But these are rules. If those manoeuvres had been made in France and a jockey was issued with a 4-day ban, would I be surprised? Probably not.
I just want to take you back to that initial question. Your experience as a jockey, how much do you draw on that when you're broadcasting? Or do you leave it to one side and try and assess a race from a different perspective?
You try and have a complete objective view, Nick, but I do believe if I'm personally speaking for myself, I would probably have a little bit more empathy, because I would have been in the position before. But all you can do from a rule perspective, and an onlooker who has never ridden a race can empathize with this, is understand what is fair. You know, did they put anybody in danger? Or if you're talking about interference and rules, it's most certainly you need to understand it's not black and white. And I think most people appreciate that it's not black and white. And very few professional riders won't ride to the rules because they are trying to make a living. They don't want to be sitting on the bench, and they'll understand that there will be repercussions. But it's a little bit unclear. I say it's black and white, or it's not black and white, but at the moment, you need to understand that there will be consistency and trust the stewarding in the country or in each jurisdiction that it will be consistent. And at the moment in Ireland, I don't believe it is.
And invariably, particularly during a busy, hot summer, this comes to a head at the feature meetings. And we've got one of the biggest meetings of all next week at York. And time to turn our attentions to the Judmont International and to Gaeath, who will go off favourite for that race. I've been speaking to his trainer, Charlie Appleby, and began by asking him how the horse was training.
Good morning, Nick. We're all in good shape, thank you very much. As you say, this year has been a great year for him, winning the coronation and the coral eclipse. And it was always our plan to head for the Judmont International thereafter. And his preparation has gone well to date. He looks great, and he's given us all the right signs. Shane Featherston, as I've always said, rides him. A fantastic job of him, and he had a easy piece of work there, yesterday, and everyone was very pleased. So if he can he'll work again on Saturday, and hopefully, if we he ticks the box there, we'll be all set for next Wednesday.
Shane Featherston Huff was the man who famously rode Frankel in a lot of his work. It's 10 years to the day since Frankel won that maiden race at Newmarket. How important is it having somebody of that sort of experience and context riding a horse like Gaeath in the mornings?
It's very important, Nick, in my book. As you know, unless you've driven a nice car, as I'd always say, you wouldn't know what a nice car is to drive. It's no different to a racehorse. So, you know, as he's quite rightly said there, you know, Shane's association with Frankel and motivator. He sat on good horses and knows how to, you know, be a part of that preparation into a big race. And, you know, we're very lucky to have his assistance on this horse, and he's done a great job. And I say he's pleased with the horse, and we're pleased with him. So all the right signs are going the right way at the moment towards next week.
I know you were trying to space his races out a little bit, but do you think as a whole horse he is taking his sport better than he was last year?
Most definitely, yes. I mean, as sort of stated there earlier in the year, Dave, he's a you know, more of a finished article now. He's a 5-year-old there. His post-race conditions on each race has always been a lot more stronger this year than it has been in the past. Mentally, he just takes that racing better. On the day, he's, you know, again, taking his race days better. So, no doubt about it. We're talking about a different animal than we've been, you know, dealing with during his, you know, 2, 3, and 4-year-old career. He's as I say, he's the finished article now, and he's a very manageable horse.
Do you think he could be the best middle distance horse you've trained?
For me, for sure. I mean, obviously, you know, very lucky to have Massal to win the Derby, and you know, and Hawkbill and horses like that. But he's always been one of those horses. I've said that he's in a sort of a camp of Blue Point. He excites you in the morning because he's such an extravagant galloper, great mover, and you know, he's delivered in the afternoons. I mean, as we know, he's been a horse that we've had to, you know, handle with care there during his career, as we've mentioned there earlier regarding the spacing between his runs. But but you know, where he stands now and what he's achieved to date, he would definitely be probably the best middle distance horse I've ever handled.
Who do you fear the most, Charlie?
In Group 1 races, Nick, I fear all of them. but out of respect for, because, you know, as we all know, to get to a Group 1 race is challenging, but you've also got to have earned the rights to be there, and all of those I'm sure are going to start there on Wednesday are going to have to be respected. You've got, you know, Lord North there, you know, the Prince of Wales, you've got Ben Battle, a good solid horse there. Magical, there's a host of them. But you know, as we know, if this horse is you know, on song on the day, I feel he's the horse they've all got to beat.
I know you have very limited time left, but in 30 seconds, tell me about Pinatubo and Space Blues and what the plans are.
Space Blues come out of this race very well, and the plan with him is to head to the Prix de Forêt at Longchamp on our weekend. Delighted with his performance. And as respects to Pinatubo, he's building up now. He's had a nice little break there after the Jean Prat, and the plan is to head to the Prix de Moulin. And I say he's building up his preparation towards that and looking forward to it.
So probably unlikely they will take each other on.
Well, to start off with, I say we're going back up to the mile there for Pinatubo in the Prix de Moulin.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm confident we'll be okay. You know, over that trip. And but at the end of the day, he's the one box he hasn't ticked as yet. So we've got that challenge first, and we will then make a call after that race of whether we come back to the seven again or whether we just stick put and hopefully head to the Breeders' Cup mile.
And Marshall of the Seas is the best 2-year-old I've seen this season. Everyone seems to have forgotten that already. Where's he going?
He's on track for the National Stakes, Irish Champions weekend. He's had a nice little break after the superlative there, and again, he's in his preparation there of building up his work towards the National Stakes.
Charlie, thank you so much. Very generous with your time.
Pleasure, Nick. Best of luck.
So that's the latest on Gaeath. Jane, are we still in danger of not giving this horse enough fanfare, do you think?
I believe so, and I'm number one at fault for that. I can't say that the racing public don't give him enough love, because I am probably the first person that really hasn't given this horse the credit that he deserves. And it's probably a case of last year he kind of lost his way through the back end of the season, and it's in my mind, when a horse is so hard on themselves, this guy over races a lot, that they don't sustain their form. And to be honest, when this guy beat Anthony Van Dyck in the Coronation in Newmarket, I almost expected him to not sustain that level of form in the Eclipse. And he actually took a step forward, beating Enable and Sandown. And if he can do that again in the Judmont, I think he'll solidify himself as one of the best in the world. Because at the moment, he's around when probably the 3-year-old colts are lacking, and he is putting them in their place. And that is a level that we need to have a parallel on. If Gaeath is the springboard that, say, a Cameco needs to reach, well, that's what we need. We need that parallel of form. And I hope he maintains that form, because he has proven himself when he went out in the Eclipse there to be shot at. It was a wonderful performance. And it's a long straight in York. They're going to have every opportunity to come and take him. But he's a very brave horse. And last year I penciled him down as also being reliant on soft ground. And he clearly isn't.
He is taking on high-quality opposition. If he's not been talked about much, neither is Lord North, about the most impressive Group 1 winner of the season at Royal Ascot. I don't think John Gosden minds. He can spend all the time talking about Enable and other horses in his yard that are taking everybody's attention, and Lord North can just sail serenely under the radar.
Yes, well, it's probably a case of nobody was on him in Ascot, so if you've made a few quid off a horse, you often remember them and track them through the season. But this is another Dubawi colt. When he beat Adea at Royal Ascot, he wasn't a huge price, but for me, it was a race that lacked probably a superstar, and he was a comprehensive winner. But for me, he needs to go out and beat the best of what's in Europe. Adea was very good in Australia, but we know that he's at a good level, but not top level over here. So Lord North, he's going to have the perfect run of the race to track Gaeath and have a chance. But again, for me, on all known form, he needs to take another step forward.
And Cameco, have they gone for the right race? Have they gone 10 furlongs at York over a mile, straight mile at Deauville in the right spirit, do you think? Is this the right play for him?
Well, I think Connections must be commended for bringing him back out. He finished on their coattails on the bridle at Goodwood. I think this is the perfect race for him. I know it's 10 and we, so he didn't stay in Epsom, but he's going to have a fast pace to run at and come late. That's going to be imperative for Oisin Murphy. He'll hopefully have every opportunity to go by, unlike a Goodwood when essentially he had nowhere to go. But I think Kameko, for me, if I was having a bet in the race, I would back Kameko. I think he's a very, very good horse, and this is ideal for him.
And with Enable missing the Yorkshire Oaks, what does that leave for Love to beat?
Nothing. I don't know. Honestly, Nick, I don't know what's running in the race, but it's her race to lose. What we saw at Epsom was extraordinary. Ennis Diamond now did run in Gorn yesterday and got beat, but it was the way she did it. The way she ran off an unusual pace that wasn't end-to-end and got a mile and a half and looked like to have improved an awful lot for a mile and a half compared to the mile. So if Enable is going to have a rival worthy of lowering her colours in Paris, this is the ideal preparation next assignment for Love, and I expect her to be dominant.
Let's talk about the sales, because you've been at the sales for the first time since February.
Yes, I was at Gough Land Rover sale yesterday. Everybody, it just feels grateful to be there. They understand that, everybody understands that this was a very difficult endeavour, and I suppose particularly at the moment when things are a little bit uneasy in Ireland, and everybody was just playing by the book, doing everything that nobody wants to be the reason that this didn't happen. And the trade was good, pleasantly relieved at how the market has held up. It was very positive to see a lot of English names signing online. Moving forward, this was the first huge test for the Irish bloodstock industry, and I would say it's a good pass.
And you had some harsh words for the sales companies a few weeks ago. Have they done enough in your mind to smooth the situation now?
Well, you're dealing with two different sales houses. This was Gough's, and I spoke to Henry Beebe, and can only imagine his team had, they had to make an awful lot of adaptations and to make everything work, they had to have the government on their side and prove that it could be done. And they have proven it can be done. And going forward, they set a precedent for auctions in Ireland. But it is always with the cooperation of vendors, buyers and everybody attending that this works. And I think that was integral to how everything operated yesterday.
Well, good to see the sales houses rolling again after a fashion. And of course, we're trying to keep the show on the road as best we can. But the Racecourse Association here in the UK are very keen that people are reminded of their responsibilities. And I've been speaking to their Racecourse Services Director, Caroline Davis, and I began by asking her how she thought we were doing.
I think that racing has really proved itself to be behaving very responsibly. I think the work that Dr. Hill did with the DCMS and Public Health England to get racing back up and running and the work around those protocols was incredibly thorough and incredibly practical for the racing scenario. I think that from what we see around the country, around the world, we've already experienced a local lockdown in the Leicester area and now up in the northwest and the northeast. I think we have to remain incredibly vigilant, and I think we have to appreciate that racing is lucky to be in the position that it is, with continuing to race, albeit behind closed doors, which is incredibly disappointing. But we have seen some relaxation in that to obviously allow owners back who are integral to our sport and really important to us. And it's very frustrating for us that the owner experience when they come on course is not as it was or as we would like it to be. But we are an elite sport. We're working under the phase 3 guidelines, which are incredibly strict. We need to maintain those. We need to protect the integrity of our green zone, which is our racing zone. And we need to follow the basic principles of the 2 meter distancing, you know, the face masks if that can't be achieved, and, you know, good hygiene. processes as well.
Are you concerned that people are starting to be a little too lax with their following of the guidelines?
I think that we will all have seen the BHA reiterating the guidelines to everybody at the end of last week. And I think it's inevitable when you've been doing something for a long time that you can see a degree of complacency. But we need to continue to be responsible. We've got a long way to go to get racing back to having spectators and having more owners and having freedom of movement. And if it means that we've got to comply strictly with the guidelines that we've got in place, then that's what we must do. And I would encourage everybody to do so.
Given the increasing R rate in certain parts of the country, there were fears expressed earlier in the week that we could end up going backwards before we go forwards in terms of getting people to the sport. Is that a fair assessment, do you think, where we stand now?
I would like to hope that the protocols that we have in place and how racing has been seen to be complying with those very closely and strictly, I would like to think that that would be a positive for racing, and that we would be seen as being responsible.
You don't foresee a situation where owners are suddenly prohibited from going to the racecourse?
There have been instances of that, obviously, with the Leicester local lockdown. The protocols had to revert to what they were back early in June. And at that point in time, owners were not allowed to come to the racecourses. So it is entirely possible if the lockdowns continue, that could well happen again.
That could happen on a localised basis, and we don't know whether the government will then roll that out nationally. As far as the plans to get crowds in and to be part of the pilot scheme, as and when the government decides that's appropriate, can you give me any details about which racecourses are applying for that, Caroline?
We have put forward to DCMS that we are here and ready to run more pilots, as our colleagues in Scotland are as well. And we're hopeful to hear from them at some point, but we don't have any confirmed information yet.
So that hasn't come through use of the reports in The Guardian earlier in the week that Newmarket's Cambridgeshire meeting, the Air Gold Cup meeting were two meetings that might be put forward, and of course Goodwood Celebration Mile, and that was reported in the press earlier this week. That hasn't been sort of formally sanctioned or ratified as yet.
No, it hasn't.
And would that need to be formally sanctioned and ratified by the Racecourse Association before going to government?
It wouldn't need to be ratified by us. We don't have any regulatory role in that. The government are the people that make the decisions as to where and when the pilots take place.
But you would need to know about it first.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we're working really closely with the racecourses, and I think that's one of the things through all of this. The racecourses have worked incredibly hard and incredibly well together. And we have a weekly call for all racecourses where they share best practice and discuss how things are going and if things are going well or how things can be improved. So, you know, the communication between the courses and them working together has been absolutely tremendous.
So my thanks there to Caroline Davis, and it just remains for Jane Magan to send you away with a winner. Jane?
Yes, we'll make a few bob at lunchtime. The first race from Leopardstown, I was in the Curra to see Haranda finish second in her maiden over six. She steps up a furlong today. She's out of a sister to Harzand, so I think that will only bring out a little bit more improvement. And Dermot Wells' horses are really hitting form. So Haranda in the first race at Leopardstown for me.
Jane, thanks so much. Thank you for listening as well. If you do enjoy this podcast, please don't forget to tell your friends first and then rate, review and subscribe to us. And you can do that on Spotify, SoundCloud, iTunes and Google. But from me and from Jane and from all of us here, we will see you again tomorrow. That was Thursday, August the 13th. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with FitzDares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.